the reorganized family, also sometimes called the step family or the blended family. Ironically, the last term, the blended family, is the least popular term for families that are put together among professionals, because professionals recognize that families that are reconstituted from, you know, a parent here, some kids there, put it all together in a new way, these families do not actually blend. And today we're going to look at why they don't blend and what it is that they do instead of blending. Some professionals like to call these families the combined family or the expanded family, sometimes the extended family, but never the blended family. So let's look at why that is. When a mother and father have children and they live in one home, so we call this the nuclear family. And then lots of things happen to the nuclear family in today's world. There's always the possibility of divorce or death in any family, and that would leave a single parent and children. So the choice really now is one single parent and some children, or two single parents and some children. Now, the children may never see a parent again who has left the family, like a divorced parent, but more commonly, they will actually live in two different homes. And very often, there will be new parents added to the scene as the single parents choose new mates and form new family units. So it is possible for a child to have two complete sets of parents and two homes, sometimes living in each home 1 week here and 1 week there, so having really two families that are quite complete as family units. However, they're not permanent. So now, for the child living in a situation in which he has one biological parent and then has a new person coming in the role of the new person is the biological parent's spouse. The child or children involved have experienced loss. Somehow they lost a parent. Unless this occurred when the child was an infant who has no recollection of the parent, the child's experience will be that of grief and loss, sometimes traumatic loss, depending on how the loss of the parent actually occurred, whether it was death, a sudden death, a gradual death, a sudden separation and divorce, or a gradual process. There's all kinds of scenarios that might have happened. But if the child did know a parent, was close to a parent, who then left the family home, then that child has experienced loss. And the loss affects the way the child will respond to the new person in the situation that he's now living in. So let's just use some examples here. Let's say there is a girl and she's living now with her mother. Her mother's remarried. So there is this new quasi-father, I'm going to call him for a moment. And she may have access to her biological father as well in another house, and perhaps the biological father's new partner, so a quasi-mother. So, okay, this is the child's situation. Now, who is this kid going to trust? You know, she has two biological parents who have really disrupted her own life for her, now shuttling between two houses. She's seen that love does not necessarily endure if this is a divorce situation or if it's a death situation. Okay, our example isn't, but in a death situation, the child also sees that nothing is really secure. Nothing is really safe. It takes a long time for a child to sort out the loss that has occurred. So they're not usually about to jump in and just wholeheartedly love any new buddy, any new step parent, right? And there's more reasons than the one we're just mentioning, which is lack of trust in the world, in love, in stability, and so on. But that one reason right there, that lack of trust, that fear, would stop children from instantly giving their heart over to a step-parent. And, you know, a child would have other reasons as well. For example, there can be a sense of betrayal to the biological parent, so that if the child did love the step-parent too much, she or he might feel like they're doing something wrong, doing something that's a betrayal to the natural parent. Now, little kids, like 2 and 3 year olds, they're actually fairly quickly won over, even if they have experienced some loss. They're gonna heal from that more quickly. And if somebody comes in and treats them really warmly and lovingly, they will give their hearts over rather quickly. But as the child is a little bit older than that, so a 4-year-old will, you know, could take just a bit longer. 5-year-old and 6-year-olds will take a little longer. 8-year-olds and 10-year-olds will take a lot longer, and children over 10 will take a lot longer, and especially if we have now adolescents 12 years old and up, you know, they could take sometimes years before they're going to trust a new person on the scene who's there in place of a parent. And we'll discuss what I mean by that soon. But let's say for now, their natural parent's spouse. Okay, so the older the child is, the less quickly they're just going to give their heart over to a step-parent. And this is kind of upsetting to new step-parents, who often come in ready to love a child and ready to fill in the gaps and make a home. And very often, the person who's marrying somebody with children really wants to do the parenting as well as the spousing part of family life. And they could be crushed when they find that the child does not have an open heart. In fact, sometimes the children are outright hostile towards somebody who comes to stand in their mother's place as they see it, or their father's place as they feel it. So that's a little challenge for the adults. So we can see that's going to take some time. And also another kind of thing happens there where, depending on how long the child was alone with a single parent, the child can actually experience jealousy over the new person in the family. So we now have a new spouse coming in, sometimes into the parent's bedroom where the child had been staying. And something that I usually recommend when people get divorced, widowed, separated, however it is, that they find themselves alone, I usually suggest that they do not take the child into their bed with them, because much as this is comforting in the short run, the next thing we know, the adult finds a new partner, and that new partner is now going to occupy that bed. And imagine what the child feels like being kicked out of the bed that he found comfort in when the family was dissolved, when there was a shock or a trauma or a loss, whatever it is. That was the child's security place. And now this stranger comes in and kicks him out. Well, that's not really good for anybody's mental health there. So, you know, when the family finds itself split and upset and so on, even though the temptation is great, I say do not take a child into the bed who was not there previously. Okay, if you have a 2-year-old who was sleeping with you previously, well, that's fine, because then, you know, when the child will be moving into her own bed, as she would have anyways sometime within that year probably. So some people do sleep with their infants and toddlers, but I'm talking about a 5-year-old who was sleeping in his own bed just fine for the last 3 years, and then, you know, finds that the family's dissolved and now seeks the comfort of mother's bed or father's bed. That is a no-no, okay? Because of the wounding that might occur later. But even if the child isn't in the parental bed, what can happen here is the child sees that another adult comes along and is taking the parent's time and attention and affection. So imagine a kid who's lived for 4 years, let's say, alone with a parent. And 4 years is not long from an adult's point of view, but it's like 40 years from a child's point of view. Those years, do you remember how it was? They go so slowly when you're a child. so slowly. So 4 long years of the child having mom to herself or dad to herself. And then a person comes on the scene and whoops, father's now no longer so available, not available to play those games or take those walks or do those activities that were done before. Or now everything has to be shared with the newcomer. And naturally, kids are going to be quite out of joint about that. They're going to be jealous and insecure about the love that their parent has for them, competitive for the parent's time and attention. They can feel very displaced. So that's another challenge for the children, and a challenge for the children's ability to bond with the enemy, so to speak, okay, because this new person is the one who is taking the parent away. So children are not necessarily going to be too happy about that, and they may feel angry at the newcomer as well as angry at the parent for abandoning them. So that's the background, and it's that's just the beginning there of the problems. We're going to talk about what parents can do to help their children actually adjust to the new family and do better. But let's keep a few more facts in mind here. So the first thing we've been looking at is what it's like for the child to be facing the newcomer in the family. What about the parent? So we said, first of all, that the new parent may be surprised and quite disappointed to find that he or she is not greeted with an open heart or open arms or open anything, and in fact may be greeted with hostility. How will the step-parent handle this? Now, the step-parent is a parent, okay, even though this person is primarily the new spouse in a certain way. In other words, somebody comes in and marries somebody who has children. And they're not marrying the children. They actually have no legal relationship to the children. They are marrying the adult, perhaps hoping to have a lovely experience with the children, but, you know, they're there. Now, sometimes the family, even the children, think of this newcomer as mummy's new husband or daddy's new husband, or it's mummy's husband, daddy's husband. The kids themselves do not think of this person as a new parent. Well, that's understandable from a certain point of view, in the sense that two parents is really enough for most people. People don't want 4 parents. Parents tell you what to do and they give you discipline, and you know, parents are a pain in the neck, so to speak, from a child's point of view. So we don't really want more parents. And also, adults are shy to announce that there is a new parent on the scene, and sometimes encourage children to call the new parent just by his or her first name. So it's, you know, Daddy and Jane, or it's, you know, Mommy and Jack, you know. So now there's a problem with that, certainly from the point of view of Jewish law. A child is not allowed to call a parent by a first name. So we might say, well, okay, this person isn't really a parent. But if they're living in the house with the partner, with the children's actual parent, this person is going to be a parent in many, many ways. And I'm going to describe some of those ways. But the person, it's an adult who will be participating in parenting just by the virtue of the fact that they are there living with the child. So this person really requires a title of some kind, even if you want to call him uncle or auntie or something in front of it. Now, there's lots of alternative names, even, you know, in English for mom, for example. There's mom and mummy and ma and mother. If you really want to get your stepmother, I never heard anybody call anybody that one, but, you know, then that's just in one language. And if you speak a few languages, you can come up with lots and lots of alternative names for mothers and fathers. And these titles would show respect, and they would also acknowledge the reality that the person who is living in the house is now providing a lot of what a natural parent provides. For example, the parent, just by virtue of being there, is providing a model of adult behavior. That person is there. How does that person eat? How does that person manage time? How does that person show affection? How does that person communicate? How does that person handle anger or stress, time pressures, etc.? Whatever that person does, that person who is there at 7 o'clock in the morning and there at 7 o'clock in the evening and there day in, day out, week after week and month after month and year after year, that person is going to have a tremendous educational impact on the children who are living there. So he is providing a model of how to be a person, a model of how to be a spouse, and to a certain extent, a model of how to be a parent as well, because just the way this person is warm or cold, right? So some people come in and they say, well, those are your children, not really mine. I don't really have to interact with them that much. You take care of them, and I'll just grunt to them once in a while, you know, or worse yet, I'll just discipline them once in a while, right? So what happens is that the child actually experiences a cold or perhaps uncaring adult for, I don't know, 10 years. It could happen that the child is 10 years old when that person moves in and 20 years old when the person moves out. When the child moves out. So for 10 years, that child could be exposed to somebody who actually interacts with them coldly, modeling coldness in a parent. Or, you know, in a better scenario, that person is very warm, very loving, very generous, very kind, very sensitive or respectful, you know, all of these nice things. And imagine living with somebody who was like that for 10 developmental years or sometimes 15 developmental years or more, right? So whatever the step parent is becomes a powerful lesson for the child who's living with him or her. So somebody who's married to somebody who has children is in fact doing parenting just by the way they are being there. So we want to take the responsibility to know if you are a step parent, the child will be looking to you as a source of love and a model of love. And however you express that, you know, whether in fact you give it generously or you withhold it, that is going to be the child's experience of love from you as a parent, right? Now, let's look at managing relationships with stepchildren. So here we have a kid who doesn't want you on the scene necessarily, or is confused or disoriented by the feelings that he or she has towards you because maybe they kind of like you, but you're not really supposed to be there, and really it's the natural parent who's supposed to be there. And the marriage itself actually is a time of grief for children because it proves to them that once and for all, their parents are never going to get back together. So, you know, the intrusion of you onto the scene can cause a lot of upsetting emotions for the child. And you're going to have to be a lot more mature than the child, right? If the child is rejecting you, you're going to have to understand that that's not really personal, especially because you're such a delightful person. I mean, how could anybody reject you, right? I mean, you're kind and you're warm and you're loving and you're patient and you're understanding, and still your stepchild or children are rude to you, unkind to you, they're cold to you, they're awful to you. How long can you take that? Well, we hope you can take it for many months or sometimes several years, because that may be how long it takes before the child realizes, hey, you're really nice and you've really been there for them the whole time and so patient with them and so on. It could take them a long time before they catch on to how great you are. Now, during this time, your main task is to show them the loving side of you. In normal parent-child relationships, there's something I teach called the 80-20 rule, which says that 8 out of 10 communications need to feel good to the child. And this does give the child a sense of being loved. So that's joking and listening and giving treats and affection and compliments, all that good warm stuff makes a child feel loved. And 20% can be reserved for instructions and discipline, things that, even criticism or correction, that is not too much of the negatives can happen. And that's with kids under 12. When it gets to be a child over 12, we use the 90-10 rule, which is about 9 out of 10 communications need to feel good, and only one can really be something that's critical or an instruction or a threat of punishment or a punishment. So that's with kids who we have loved from the beginning of their lives. If you're just showing up in a child's life, you cannot actually come in with the 80-20 or 90-10 rule. It's going to be unbalanced for the first little while. The younger the child, the shorter that little while will be for the unbalanced amount of love that you're going to have to give. But with a child who's 15 years old when you come into the scene, you may never really get the right to use your 1% of parenting-type communications. That is, telling the child what to do or what not to do. Threatening the child and with consequences, disciplining the child. You know, if the child is 16 or over, I would say that probably you personally should never discipline the child. If you come onto the scene when he's that age, just, you know, hand all disciplinary matters over to the biological parent. If the child's somewhere between 10 and 15, then spend the first year, okay, being pleasant and warm and handing discipline over to the parent. And then, you know, perhaps you can gradually move into a place where you can let a child know that behavior may require a discipline. I'm hesitating there because I'm trying to picture the kid at 14, 15 also. I think it depends to a certain amount on the child. But, you know, if we're talking about older children, the general rule is let the biological parent handle the dirty work, okay? And you sit there and be kind and warm and understanding and pleasant as much as you can. But you still do have to set normal boundaries. But you would be setting boundaries the way we do it with adults. If some adult bothers you in some way, you know, you don't punish them. you set a boundary by your own withdrawal from the scene, or you... you know, you might say in a very pleasant but assertive way, you know, please lower your voice. I can hear you and understand you, you know, but you're not going to punish anybody for using the wrong tone of voice with you. So you might do that kind of boundary setting with older children without actually getting into discipline, because parents would say, if you use that tone of voice with me again, you're going to lose your car keys, or, you know, you'll be off the computer for a week and things like that. And as a new parent on the scene, that won't be something you want to do, because older children won't accept it, basically, from a person that they say is not my real parent, right? You're not my real parent, and you have no right to tell me what to do. And you're going to hear that a lot if you try and discipline a child too early. Now, if the child is under 10, they still need a lot of discipline. But even then, you're going to let the biological parent do most of that work for a good year, and you're going to be building up trust and warmth and letting them look you up and down and see what you're all about and see that hopefully you're a reasonable, fair, kind, and warm person. And then they'll accept it from you in small doses a little bit later. The younger the children, the easier it is to come in as a step parent and really do full parenting. So now, if anything goes really wrong and there's a lot of hostility and stuff, do seek family counseling, because it means the children are hurting too much, right? So don't wait until everybody's really crazy and, you know, these horrible things have happened and they're acting out in such a way that you're involved with the police every weekend, right? Just if things are not kind of making a tolerable adjustment, get counseling for you and your partner to figure out what to do together with the children. The children don't necessarily have to come to that counseling, but the two adults need to have an action plan that they're working on together. Now, in terms of principles that will just help the family function most successfully, you want to make sure that the marriage is being nurtured and that the children can see that you are attending to each other, that you care for each other, and that you're a team with each other. Sometimes children will, you know, complain to mom that the new stepdad is really mean. And then mom will complain to stepdad, "Why, honey, you got to be so much nicer to these children. You know they're hurting, and I don't want you to hurt them more," and so on. And then the mother and the father, the new father, whatever it is, start fighting and having lots of conflict. And then the kids are, well, have mixed emotions about that. You know, they've stirred up the pot, and they might feel a little guilty and a little bad, or they might feel a little gleeful that things are not so smooth for anybody. It's kind of a venue to vent their own anger and rage at what's going on. Because, again, the kids are going to be angry about all this change and just upset and upheaval in their lives. So they can kind of act it out through messing up the marriage a bit for you. So be on alert not to let that happen. If you're concerned about the way, if you're the biological parent and you're spouse is not parenting or interacting with the kids the way you'd like, get outside professional consultation and work it out together in a friendly, team-like way, all right? And then present yourself to the kids as a team. Now, the step-parent can try to get to know the kids one-on-one a little bit, maybe going shopping together or going to get some ice cream together, going on an outing, but make that seem natural and not too contrived. It's kind of like, "Oh, I'm going to the store. Do you want to come?" sort of thing, you know, would be good enough. And let the relationship sort of develop over time. You can also, I mean, this is a little out of order here, but I'd say before you get remarried, you know, talk to your children about the changes that are going to happen. And with young children, you can use bibliotherapy, which is the use of library books and stuff that show pictures and have explanations of families that are getting married again and what that home life looks like and stuff. So you can help your kids adjust in advance and keep talking afterwards. How does it feel for you that we've moved out of our old house? How does it feel being in the new house? What do you think of this spouse of mine so far? And then let the kids say whatever they say and do not correct them. Simply use emotional coaching. Name their feelings that they are saying. Just replay the feelings back to them. Accept those feelings. Just nod your head. So if they say something like, "Well, actually, I hate him and I can't stand the way he eats and I don't like, you know, he has no right, you know, sitting in my chair and blah, blah," whatever it is, you know, whatever the kids' complaints are, your job as the natural parent would be, "Yes, I understand, honey. Yeah, I can see how that would be upsetting. Right. Well, maybe, you know, we'll see what we can do about that." And, you know, things like that. Keep the communication open. And just again, we have to understand that the children are going through so much. So both the natural parent and the step parent have to have tremendous amounts of maturity and patience. It's just a hard job, you know. This reorganized family is a challenge. It's really a challenge. So reading up about it beforehand and knowing what to expect and knowing how it goes for other families. Sometimes your local family service agency actually has programs for reorganized families, and that might help you out a bit as well. But this is not an easy thing. It's quite complex. And hopefully by now you understand a little bit about why these families, step families, do not blend, actually. They don't blend because, you know, really it consists of a bunch of different family units, a mother, a child, a mother and children, a father and children, new spouses, two different homes. No, there's, you know, the people coming and going all the time. Remember in the new marriage, the other spouse may also have children who are coming and going through and at that home. And so blending is out, right? But expanding, combining, reorganizing, these are possibilities, and it can be something that is going to be an enriched and positive experience for everybody after some adjustment period, right? After a lot of adjustment period. If there's a lot of love, a lot of patience, a lot of respect, and sometimes a lot of professional help as well, just to ease over all the transitions which can be expected and which have to be regarded as perfectly normal. So, family life is hard with everybody, not just the step-parenting situation. It's always quite the challenge, and we have to do a lot of our own personal work to be ready to help our children grow up. We have to do a lot of growing ourselves. And by the end of these family journeys, well, we've all grown a lot, not just the kids. So have fun in your parenting, no matter what kind of parenting you're doing.